On today's episode of The Poolside Genius, we introduce our golf expert, Dana Hines, and talk the British Open. Next, she offers advice for female athletes, ways that golf can adapt to millennials, and we offer predictions for the Open. Finally, Hines makes her master's meal selection, and we go hurry-up tempo with our NASCAR round of questioning. Enjoy the show.
This is Poolside Genius, where we always make a splash.
As a part of our golf coverage, we are taking a look at the British Open. And since if any of you have ever seen me golf or heard of my golfing exploits, it is not good. All balls end up probably in the rough or more accurately on the other fairway. So I can't really speak too well about golf, but we do have an expert here that can actually speak with Remo and do a great job of breaking down the British Open. And this is Dana Hines. She started golfing when she was 13 years old. She's a former Berks County Women's Champion. She has 7 championships at Willow Hollow and 3 club championship wins at Reading Country Club. She also played golf at Radnor University from 2002 through 2006. And as such a great teammate and golf expert, she actually caddied for her college teammate, Laura Terraby, on the Women's European Tour in 2007. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
Do you have anything else you'd like to let us know about, you know, your background in golf or anything else?
No, I had a great experience, especially playing at Radford. I got 4 years where I got to travel up and down the East Coast and play some really awesome courses, including Pinehurst. So I've also been to Europe, and I've been to St. Andrews, where the British Open has been, of course, many times, home of golf. So I'm excited that the British Open is coming up, and we can look at this awesome course of Carnoustie. It's in Scotland.
That sounds really great. When you were over at St. Andrews, what would you say was one or two things that were really memorable?
It was August. I caddied at the Women's British Open, and it was early August when the Women's British Open was taking place. And I'll tell you what, I had on a winter hat and wow. Rain pants the whole time. The wind was ripping, and it was cold for August. So the conditions that these guys are playing in they're very, very difficult. And I really didn't believe it until I was there. And I guess the other thing I would say is the greens are enormous. When I was in St. Andrews, I remember one of the greens on the front nine, it had 2 holes on because 2 different holes were going to the same green. And the players didn't even interfere with each other because the green was so massive. So it's a totally different style of play than we're used to here.
When you were caddying for your player, when she went over to compete, did she have to do anything different in regards to competing on a links course compared to what you would be here in the States?
Absolutely. So my friend Laura, who did turn pro and went to the Women's European Tour, she was on the Women's European Tour for 7 years. She played in the winter. She would come back to the U.S. and play at a golf course called the Sanctuary in Florida. So that's a more traditional style course that we're used to. A lot of, you know, forced carries and you play the ball real high. But when Laura moved to Europe for the summers to play on the Women's European Tour, she actually made her home base in England. And wow. So every day she would practice. She stayed with friends in England, and every day she would practice at a golf course called Chartwell that was a link style golf course, just to kind of acclimate to the weather, the style of play, and a more link style golf course.
So obviously she was probably looking to keep her ball a little bit lower in terms of flight.
Absolutely. She wanted to keep the ball low, out of the wind, and a lot more around the greens. You know, you score around the greens, so she did so many more bump and runs. I think we're all accustomed to taking out our lob wedge and trying to, you know, hit it over things or hit it high and make it stop in a real fancy way. But she got used to bump and runs, hitting a lot of like 7 and 8 irons around the green.
Now, just for some of our 6-star listeners that maybe aren't as familiar with golf or maybe have never had a caddy, besides carrying the clubs, I mean, what does that really entail you know, from your perspective?
Tell you what I really learned. I'm a social studies teacher, so math isn't my strong suit, but I've really learned a lot of math goes into caddying. You know, you have to measure distances to the hole, distances to carry bunkers, be short of bunkers. So math, also just organizing. You need to keep the clubs clean. You need to know where the clubs are periodically. And, you know, just the bag gets heavy. You need to have stuff on call when she needed the stuff.
Did you ever get embarrassed, like pull out the wrong club and like quick have to go back, or were you pretty on the spot?
I have two memories where I did do ridiculous things. One, I had a bad back for one tournament in England, so I took a pull cart, which was far more accepted in Europe before it was here. Now you see most of the college players are actually pulling their golf clubs. It's easier on your back. But I was carrying a pull cart and I got stuck on a side hill and the whole bag fell over and all the clubs fell out and I felt very unprofessional and ridiculous, and I had to scatter to put it all back together. And my friend Laura just kept walking, shaking her head, and she parred the hole, but I was going to feel a lot of guilt if she made a bogey. And then one time, yeah, I did forget a putter cover head on a green that was pretty far from the next tee, and I had to run back.
Who hasn't done that from time to time? Or, I mean, I know on the driving range, I've let go of a club one time and it went flying into the middle and I had to look around and sheepishly go out and get it. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm right there with you.
Things happen.
I wonder if we could find that on YouTube somewhere. That would be interesting.
I also learned a lot about when I was caddying. You know, when we go out and we play, and you're talking about playing and doing some ridiculous things. You know, I rake the bunkers and I try my best, but there's like a whole caddy protocol, ways, methods to rake the bunkers. You get massive fines if you don't rake them correctly. So there's like tons of pressure there, and just moving the flag around the green, you don't necessarily notice when you're watching on TV. The caddies are holding the flags in very specific ways, and there's a very specific method to pass it from caddy to caddy when the players finish out. And I had to learn this whole caddy system, this caddy protocol.
Now, you and your player were teammates, obviously friends, but like, did the caddies just like all hang out sometimes, or was it just the caddy and golfer hanging out, or, you know, what was that like?
You know, there's a whole caddy culture, and there's these people who definitely travel from place to place, and typically it's men who are following. I was on the Women's European Tour, so they would, you know, go where the next tournament was, and you could pick up a caddy for hire, or some people, of course, took their caddies with them. My friend Laura was really good to me. She always included me, so I got to meet a lot of the professional golfers, which I appreciated, and I wasn't relegated to the caddy ranks.
So what you're saying is Ty Webb wasn't playing also along that?
No, not at all.
In regards to, like, off the course, especially in terms of the British, from what I can understand, one of the big things to do there is obviously bet. Was that part of the women's tour also when they were there?
When we were in St. Andrews, there was this bar that we went to. I can't remember the name of it, but it overlooks the 18th hole of the old course at St. Andrews. And they have all these pictures on the walls of all these people who've won the British, and these very famous golfers who've played there. And they go in and they have beers at the end of the round, or
sure,
who knows, before the round, depending on who you are. And definitely there's a far more permissive culture, I think, of betting and gambling and, you know, even playing skins matches. These people are real people, and they're playing to have fun as well as make some money for their career too. So yeah, absolutely.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Absolutely. So now we're going to turn our attention to the actual British Open. Now, you know, let's talk the course a little bit. I mean, what insights do you have from when you were there, you know, observing, and you got to see that?
Well, I think when you think Scotland, which is where Carnoustie is, I think you think real green grass, and you're seeing tons of wind, tons of rain, because Carnoustie's on the coast in Angus, Scotland, and I think we're not going to see that coming up next week. They say Great Britain's in a heat wave. Things are burned out. You do see these rolling hills, and you do see the ground is kind of shaved, and they say the course is going to be really, really fast. for next week's British Open.
One of the things they always say about Carnoustie, it's certainly demanding. It's a considered fair, though. I think for the seven times that it's already hosted the British, four of those events have already been the best scores, at least over par. So scoring at Carnoustie is going to be quite difficult.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really exciting. You're going to see these guys struggle on a true test of golf, as opposed to, you know, we're coming off the U.S. Open, and Shinnecock Hills got so much coverage because of tricking out the golf course, making it difficult, but difficult in a gimmicky way where the greens were, you know, they were losing those greens at the U.S. Open. Yeah. At Carnoustie, I think we're going to see a true test of golf, and, you know, it's so well bunkered. They say it's one of the best bunkered golf courses in the entire world, and everybody who plays there isn't angry when their scores are high. I mean, they're disappointed in their play, but they really say this is a truly difficult golf course.
I know on the 14th hole, for instance, there's like this huge bunker that if you get in there, and it's a par five, you know, you're lucky to escape with par. It's a good score.
Absolutely.
And then you get into the final four holes, which are just killers.
Yeah, I think, you know, even if you have a lead and you're going into the second to last hole, the 17th or the 18th hole, you can't count anybody out because it's so unpredictable up until the end. And I think that's what's going to make this so fun to watch. I mean, look at the last time it was at Carnoustie. You saw Padraig Harrington double that 18th hole. Sergio Garcia bogeyed that 18th hole, and it forced a playoff. And I'm hoping we're going to see something exciting like that again this time.
I wouldn't doubt it. I know in 99. The same thing happened. Gene Vandeveld goes in with a three-stroke lead in 18, and he just totally lost it. And then goes into a playoff, and unfortunately he doesn't win. Paul Laurie does. So who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, it's those bunkers. And, you know, one wayward shot or one gust of wind puts you in those bunkers, and you're looking at bogey or double.
That's the beauty of the British, I think. Besides the weather, and it's just a totally different visual that we're used to, it's good stuff.
I agree. And, you know, the history of the game, you know, it's where golf originated. And I think it's awesome to watch. And it comes down to the wire. You know, sometimes you see some of these courses here in the U.S. where someone comes in with a runaway lead. But look at 2 years ago, look at Jordan Spieth and that run that he had in the back nine on the fourth day. I mean, he went eagle, birdie, birdie, I think, to come back and win.
Against Kuchar?
Yes.
Yeah.
Incredible golf to watch.
Yeah, it was last year. It was he just turned it on. And you know, you think Cooch was pretty much in control, and then Spieth just took that Spieth charm and took over.
Yeah, in an unbelievable way. And he started out struggling in that round and really just came back. So anything can happen on these British golf courses, which is awesome.
We'll have to eventually do some predictions here later on. We'll see.
We were thinking, since it's not every day that we have a former Division I athlete in here. I mean, I was a D3 athlete, and I use that term very loosely.
Who fumbled a lot.
Whoa, not in college. But then again, I didn't carry the ball that much either. Anyway, we have a former D1 athlete, Dana Hines, again. You know, if you obviously are aware of her from the previous segment. But what are your thoughts on going into college in terms of, you know, being a young female athlete?
I didn't start playing golf until I was 13. And I have a 4-year-old daughter who, you know, I'm trying to get into the game. And I just keep thinking it's never too late to start playing. And you have to practice. But looking back on it now, I'm 34. I would have done so many things differently when I was a teenager. Like, I thought I had to practice every day for hours, and then when I would get on the course, especially in these tournaments, every shot seemed to matter. And if I hit it OB or if I hit it in the water, it was like soul crushing to me. And now I look at golf a lot differently, and honestly, I play the same or a little bit better, because, you know, all you have to do is get the ball in the hole, and it doesn't matter what it looks like when you're doing it. So I would tell girls, you know, take the pressure off yourself. You don't have to be perfect. You're not going to be perfect. Nobody is. And I learned some of that when I was watching these professional golfers. They're not perfect, and you got to be creative and get the ball in the hole any way you can.
So are you advocating for, like, the tin cup style Shots.
You know, even if, yeah, whatever works. I played half a round of golf with my feet together once. I had those dreaded shanks. So, yeah, whatever works, because they don't draw pictures on the scorecard, as they say, and you need to get the ball in the hole. So I would have taken a deep breath, laughed at myself a little bit, and said, you know, maybe I'm hitting it with a slice today, or I have a massive fade going on today. I'm just going to do my best, work with what I got, and get the ball in the hole.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I've heard this, and I'm not sure how true it is, but I've heard that golf for female athletes is probably one of the spots where they're the most available scholarships, because there just aren't as many female golfers. I mean, did you feel that way, you know, going through the recruitment process? Or
you know, they say that, and I think that's true to a certain extent. A lot of college golf teams are starting, or a lot of college programs are starting women's golf, especially like Title IX has certainly helped out in that area. When I was looking to go to college, like UVA had just started their first ever women's golf team. So they do say that it's certainly not easy to get a college golf scholarship, and you have to jump through some hoops and you know, go through the process. But I do think that the scholarships are available for the girls to go play golf. You just, you know, you need to practice, and you need to get your name out there, and you need to get in some tournaments. And I would definitely also say you got to start playing golf courses that are, you know, 6,000 yards long, because that's really what you're looking at in college.
Now, I just wanted this to know this. You said you started when you were 13. Did you play other sports throughout your middle school and high school career?
I did, and you know, I still think that's really important. I would tell girls to do that. Play as many sports as you can. I think a lot of it has to do with being athletic and well-rounded, and I kept myself in good shape. I played soccer, and I played basketball, and you know, I played golf in the fall and through the summer. But yeah, if you're competitive and you have that instinct that you want to win, and all sports teach you that and maintain your athleticism, it definitely helps in golf.
I think the great message you're sending is for all female athletes is, you know, golf is certainly a very thinking sport. So if you're competitive and gaining confidence, from just listening to your answers, it's really trying to build girls' confidence.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, my dad used to say when I was a kid, he'd say, you know, you have the perfect mentality for golf, because if I say, think of a pink elephant, you don't think of a pink elephant. You say, well, why should I do that? And it's, you know, you're sitting on a tee and you're looking at, say, out of bounds, right, and a pond in front of you. I mean, so many people stand there and they think, I'm going to hit it in this pond, or I'm going to hit it out of bounds. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, if that's what you think, you're going to do it. So you're right. If you're confident and you can say, I can stripe this down the middle, and you have athleticism and you've practiced and you've honed your swing, absolutely. It's being confident, thinking you can win.
So do you think that if I bring a positive attitude and think positively on the course, do you think I think you might need
a little bit of practice there too. Don't forget about the practice component.
Yeah, that's a great point. My once a year, probably not going to cut it.
That's over at Shells you're talking about, right? The little...
Yeah, the mini golf, the 27-hole championship mini golf course.
Hey, over at Gassers, I won like the little trophy for the miniature golf where you have to get it into that 18th hole or whatever. I won that. I have it.
I will say, if Bender's starting mini golf, he's practicing the right skills. Short game, short game, short game is the way to go.
Right, very nice, Bender.
All right, so you know, moving forward. You have some different ideas on the game of golf. Obviously, we see that, you know, the demographics are changing. We're getting into the more millennials. And, you know, I think it looks like every sport is trying to do something to speed up or make it a more viewer-friendly game or competition. You know, what ideas are you thinking about, or do you think have been tossed out that might be a benefit to the game?
You know, you're right. We live in this instant society, and seems like there's not enough time for anything. And to play a round of golf, you're looking at 4 hours conservatively, 5 hours. So I often get tired of golf around the 14th hole. And I really think 14 holes of golf would be awesome. Or to divide a golf course, you know, instead of 18 holes, 6, 6, and 6. And you pay for the first 6, the middle 6, or the final 6, just to speed up play. And at least you can squeeze in some golf.
That's a very interesting idea. You think about just the stats. Within the last decade, the core golfer has slipped from 30 million competitors down to 25. It's just mind-boggling to think. Some of the things that I've seen, ideas that have been thrown out there, is to actually make the holes larger. So it would be obviously easier to quicken play up. What do you think of those type of ideas?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, make the hole a little bit larger, make it easier for people to play. You know, golf is a challenging sport, and I think a lot of people get frustrated, and then they don't want to come back out and play. So make the holes larger. Or Redding Country Club's just done a really interesting thing. They moved the tees up. So there's no longer the women's tees as the front tees. They've made some other tees that kind of, you know, halfway down the fairway. It's more fun for kids to play. It's more fun for seniors to play that way, and it definitely speeds up play.
One other idea I've heard of is actually carrying less clubs. I realize if you go to a par three, you're taking, what, three clubs maybe? But even for 18, thinking about just eliminating some of those redundant clubs.
Absolutely. I mean, most amateur golfers have played in one or two of those tournaments where they're like a three club tournament and a putter, and your scores actually turn out to be similar to what you're playing with, 14 clubs in your bag. So yeah, get rid of some of those clubs, and maybe it promotes walking too. You know, we're living in a health conscious society.
Now, going back to Remo's point about the whole idea that golf is down right now, do you think that was just like the Tiger Woods wave? You know, I know that there was a huge increase in fandom of the game of golf. I think a lot of people went out for golf. You know, we're hitting the driving range, hitting the links, and then it seems like as Tiger's career has kind of it's wound down. Is that what's happening, or?
I definitely think Tiger gave golf a huge boost. Tiger made golf cool to play. Tiger made golf more appealing for young people. I do think the young guys now, I mean, have you seen the Golf Boys on YouTube and their songs? They are making it fun for kids to play. You guys know Bubba
Watson.
Yeah, Bubba Watson. You got to look up these songs on YouTube. They're fantastic.
You'll find those in our show notes.
But I think also, don't forget, like 2009, 2010, 2011, people were financially struggling, and golf is a really expensive sport. So,
if
you were looking at kids to get involved in a sport at that time, you're not going to play golf. Golf is too pricey. So I think that's one of the things. Bring the price of golf down a little bit, and you have great websites like golfnow.com, and you
also
can get some hot deals.
Here's a question for you. You mentioned, or we were talking about less clubs, and you think of someone like Phil, who has recently struggled. Take the debacle of Shinnecock out of the equation. But he's a guy that's always looking to be cutting edge, to add those extra clubs. Thinking about how he's going to do over at the British, which he's won in the past, any thoughts on making some predictions here, guys? What do you think? Anybody should look for?
Well, I think, as the least knowledgeable and least experienced person here, I'm going to go back to an old favorite of mine. You know, it's a place not too far away, Fleetwood, if you will. I'm going to go Tommy Fleetwood. I think the guy's going to do really well, and I have no real basis for any of that.
Yeah,
just because, I love the name. Because, I think the guy's got style.
Yeah. Look at that 63 round.
We told you he had the course record, so you jumped right on that.
Whoa. I had him before. Yeah. Before he was even in the Masters.
He's British. He grew up playing in this kind of weather.
Unbelievable.
That's an easy pick, Bender.
Wow. There's a lot of hate flowing.
How about you, Dana? What do you think?
You know, I have to go back to an old favorite, Sergio Garcia. I love Sergio. And don't you feel like for the last 10 years he's been mulling over that playoff against Padraig Harrington at Carnoustie? I think he's out for blood. He's got the length to play. He's had some top 10 finishes in the British. It suits him. I go with Sergio Garcia.
I feel like, by the way, he has to regrip in the time between shots. It's been like 10 years since
he
shot.
But don't you think
last.
Those European fans are far kinder to him than the American fans who are always heckling him? I think he's comfortable there.
I think that's a really good pick. I mean, he's had some history there, Bender. But for my pick, with my heart, I'm going to be pulling for Ricky. I want to see him on Sunday wearing his orange, being in the draw. I just don't think he's going to – he finds a way to – always mess something up. So, thinking with my head, I'm going to go with Justin Rose. I think he's really been playing pretty steady golf all year, and I think that's the guy I'm going to predict.
That's
do
a
well.
Solid pick. Justin Rose is a solid pick.
I agree.
Back here with our first ever guest, Dana Hines. And off air, we were just chatting. I just found out something new. She, when she was over in Europe, she had the opportunity to go to London. She got unbelievably tickets to Center Court Wimbledon. And she was just talking to us about eating strawberries and cream. Just unique. Any other things that you had mentioned or that you remember from Wimbledon?
Well, yeah, we drank Pimm's and ate strawberries and cream. And it actually, we were there. It was bad weather. Some lady just gave me these free tickets, and the weather cleared. We went in. We saw Justine Henin play in Center Court. It was awesome. And the grass was beautifully green.
Were you all dressed up? No? No.
No.
Well, they all wear, like, suits and stuff. It's crazy.
We dressed up. We were just, like, random tourists there, and we weren't even prepared.
Think speaking of the food, the unique food, one of the things Bender and I have done for our last podcast, we were talking about Phil and Tiger and how they're linked to Masters history. And one of the great things about the Masters is if you win it, you get to come back the next year and you pick the menu for the champions dinner, the dinner before the event starts, where just Masters champions get to sit down with each other and have a great meal. And Bender and I have come up with ours. It was either Mexican for him or from my roots of sandwiches from South Philly. But we were thinking...
Roots are in Jersey.
We were thinking, let's put you on the spot. You've just won the Masters. You have that full year to think about it. You come back to Augusta. What are you thinking is going to be on your menu?
Oh, that's a tough question. Now you guys have me thinking. You know, Benner and I have talked about how much I love a good Hardee's breakfast sandwich with Hardee's biscuits, but I feel like, you know, that's super cheap and I could buy that on my own. So if I won the Masters, I know you're talking about your roots.
It doesn't have to be. It's just whatever's tasty to you.
It got me thinking. I'm Greek and I love a Greek gyro. Love it so much with excellent tzatziki sauce, and I could go that way. I don't know. Or my old favorite is chicken parm. So I'm actually going to go with just a chicken parm meal. Solid. Probably the best one ever because it's made at Augusta, right?
I feel like chicken parm is one of those things where it's always good. You can't go wrong with chicken parm. Never had a bad chicken parm.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's, you know, sometimes it's excellent. I mean, and sometimes it's just really good, but it's always always good.
She's not like tin cup there. She's aiming right for the middle of the green on that choice.
Absolutely solid. You're always satisfied with chicken parm.
Now, Dana, as our first guest, we have a new segment that we're going to start off. This is what we call NASCAR. If you're familiar with the up-tempo college teams, the offenses in football, they have a NASCAR or a blur package, and that means that we're going rapid-fire, no huddle, ready to go. And Reams is going to give you a question. You will have about 4 to 6 seconds to answer it. We will cut you off and go to the next one as we're keeping it rapid fire. You have to be really quick on your feet.
Oh my gosh.
Lots of pressure here at the poolside.
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
It's the only pressure we really have here.
We make you walk the plank if you are past 6 seconds.
All right. Sounds good. It's a hot day. I could go in.
Anytime. It's six going to be 6 questions.
Okay.
Some will be a choice. Multiple choice, some will be just open-ended. So I think you'll catch the drift as we go. You ready?
I'm ready. Go ahead and shoot.
All right, question one. What is your favorite sport to watch?
I love watching soccer.
Wow, World Cup.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe that's World Cup inspiration right now, but I love it.
Wow, our golf expert said soccer. Okay. Wow.
Well, hold on. What do you think? It's Croatia against France.
I don't know. I feel like I'm rooting for France in this one.
Wow. My boy Dario Saric would be upset. Anyway, question two. Here we go. What is the most memorable golf course you've played at?
You know, there was a golf course in in Alabama called Bentbrook.
What was so interesting?
Nice.
Anything interesting about it?
It was a Robert Trent Jones course. It was on the RTJ trail, and I just had a variety of holes.
Sorry. I got you. All right. Dana, you are a social studies teacher. What country would you like to live in? Can't be in the United States or Canada or Mexico.
I would live in Greece. I think Greece is beautiful.
Great food. All right, next question. Favorite NFL team?
The Eagles. You have to go with the Eagles. Super Bowl champs.
There you go. Way to go, girl.
Nauseating.
You can come back on this podcast anytime. Next question. The college that you root for, whether it's football, let's say football.
We root for Virginia Tech in my household. Everyone's maroon and orange. We're all Hokies.
Oh, the Hokes. All right. Last question. Here we go. Walk or ride a cart when golfing? When you're golfing, what do you prefer?
You got to walk. I love to walk.
So are you carrying the bag or are you pulling?
No, I pull it like an old lady now, and I'm proud of it.
Well, looks like she survived.
All right. Any parting shots for our listeners?
Just get out there, hit them straight, and don't sweat it if you hit it out of bounds.
Yeah, trust me. It's not too bad. Just get another box of balls and get ready to rip it.
Yeah, balls are cheap, right?
Not the amount
not
that
actually,
I
they're
lose.
Not that
no,
cheap. No,
no. Not
maybe,
at all.
Maybe to make people want to play golf, they should bring down the price of golf balls.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Bender, pick up that blood. It's a Caddyshack reference. Come on, get with it.
Caddyshack, come on. Caddyshack.
All right.
No, wait. Is there a Snickers down at the bottom of the pool?
That's a good. We'll have to check out. We'll get the caddy to eat it. Where is Bill Murray?
On that note, we're out.
Thanks again for listening to the Poolside Genius Podcast. Don't miss out on spending time poolside. So subscribe using iTunes, Stitcher, or any other major podcast platforms. While you are subscribing, we appreciate any feedback and 5-star reviews.
Remember, when you're poolside, always dive in the deep end.
Splash.